Welcome back to Screen Crush Rewind. I'm your host, Ryan Airy, and today we are going to talk about Supergirl. Hey, depending on your algorithm, this is either a soaring triumph of the DC universe, or it's yet another piece of superhero crap the studios are shoving down our throats. So we're going to get to the bottom of this today. We're going to talk about the movie itself, how well it was adapted from the comics. I think the backlash against the movie is a little bit weird. I'm going to talk about the usual cadre of bad players who always respond in a negative way to these movies, but then the trades are being really strange about it too. So I am freaking thrilled to have the people on that we're going to talk about this today. I'm going to bring everybody on, and then we want to get rolling. You guys are already sounding off about Supergirl in the comments. Super chats, as always, are encouraged, but not required. First of all, we have, you know her from her work as editor-in-chief of the Mary Sue, Ms. Rachel Leishman. What's going on, Rachel?
Hello. I'm excited to talk about Supergirl.
I've not talked to you about this yet, and I'm excited to hear what you think. I haven't read any of your reviews yet. So I'm very, very excited to hear from you. And you know him from the channel Philosophy All Along, Mr. Nick Michaud. What's going on, Nick?
Hey, so glad to be here. I have my notes ready. I'm excited.
All right, here we go. And finally, you know him as the guy who's trapped in our TV but doesn't know it, so please don't tell him. Colton Ogburn. What's going on, Colton?
Dude, this is really awkward. I thought we were reviewing the Supergirl TV show. It's not the
My bad. Yeah. All eight seasons of it.
Yeah, you watched all eight seasons?
Yeah.
I watched them all just to find one Easter egg from that show in the movie, and there were none. It was so disappointing. I didn't, but I do that kind of thing sometimes. I'll be like, well, I'll read 300 issues of X-Men just in case there's something in the show that calls back to one of them.
That's why you paid the big bucks.
The thing is, guys, before we start, I don't normally read reviews, but you know, they'll come across my algorithm. And with Supergirl, I was really curious because this is a movie James Gunn announced when they first said they were going to do the DCU. It is based on, I meant to bring it up here, I've got it sitting right over there. It's based on one of the best DC comics from the past 10, 20, 30, 40, like decades. And he said the script was so good that they put it into production before something you would typically see from a big studio, like another Batman movie. So I was really optimistic about it, and I'm reading, and I thought critical response would be really good. And, you know, one review I read from Variety was like, it was so condescending to geeks, I just couldn't finish it. And I tweeted something about that. And when I tweet, never tweet, that's the rule, you should never tweet. But when I did, I was like, wow, a lot of people are talking about the bad writing in this movie the day before the movie even releases. And I am just want to take a second to sound off against all of the guys out there, and it's always guys who always decide that if a movie has a woman as a lead, it's automatically the only reason it could have been made was because it's trying to be woke or the studios are woke. And in theory, I think they make this complaint because they think this is taking away from some awesome Batman movie or something like that. And I kept reading these people saying like Anna Nogueira was a terrible writer. And I'm like, what have you read that she's written? What have you possibly seen? All of these knee-jerk reactions from dudes living in basements who've never written a thing in their lives. And it got really frustrating. So I just want to say right now, please watch something before you rate it. Please watch something before you go on social media. I'm not saying Supergirl is great. We're going to get into that in a second. But dear God, do yourself the courtesy of going to see the movie first. And if you're going to say that a movie is only popular because, or if a movie was only made because it has a female lead, then you're ignoring the vast amounts of terrible movies that were only made because a popular man was the lead. For instance, Black Adam, which sucks. Was Supergirl as good as The Batman? Was it worse than Black Adam? We're going to find out in just a second. But please, dear God, I'm talking to you guys now. Please just stop being so basic and predictable with these things. Just watch something first. Go into it with an open mind. That being said, I thought the movie was okay. I want to hear what you guys have to say about it in just a second. And I apologize for the rant to everybody in the comments. And I'm sure a lot of people in the comments have seen it. And I'm looking forward to seeing what they
have. Can I just say, I applaud you for calling out Nick on his bullshit. I am glad
brought this forward. And Nick's multiple burner accounts, I've had it up to here. Out of frame.
Yeah. I'm just on IMDb, just like, you know what? Captain Marvel, never seen it, but I know it's trash.
He's every anonymous icon who logs online calling me fat for saying I like a superhero movie. That's all Nick. It's every
always me. Don't like one that they like. Here's the thing, right? When people were talking about Anna Nagaira, I looked her up. She's an accomplished playwright, second stage, Barrington stage, Ensemble Studio Theater. These are major spaces in New York City. She hasn't had that many film credits, but she has been a ghostwriter on multiple projects. Other famous ghostwriters include Carrie Fisher and Joss Whedon. You're not supposed to know
their
names.
Nicolas Cage.
Nicolas Cage was a great ghostwriter, from what I understand. I still haven't seen that movie. So anyways, when people are a bad writer and they've never written a thing in their lives, it doesn't mean you can't judge something or something, but please watch it first. That's all I'm going to say. Don't read reviews from the two worst channels on YouTube and assume that something is bad. Think for yourself. Sorry, Rachel, go ahead.
No, I just wanted to make a point to that. Also, everyone is okay with Michael Waldron, who I love. This is a safe space for Michael Waldron. But he was a couple of episodes of television writer, and then he got to do Loki and Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness. And now he's working on Avengers Doomsday, and everyone is okay with that. But he was just, because he's a dude. And I was like, so anytime they're like, oh, she didn't even write anything. I was like, you were fine when it was Michael Waldron. But a woman did it, and suddenly there's an issue that there's not enough credits. And I was like, there's a clear divide in like how you're
doing. I think I need to be clear here. There are women writers who are terrible. There are many more male writers who are terrible just because there's more male writers in Hollywood, like law of averages. And mostly what happens is the studio gets a hold of something, they gunk it up, and they ruin the process for the creatives. This is a rare instance, though, when I don't think the studio gunked anything up. I think the studio, James Gunn, liked what he saw, was behind it. There are certain decisions in this related to the comic book and Tom King I cannot wait to talk to you guys about that have a lot of fans up in arms, I think somewhat justifiably. And I'm also, by the way, going to say I'm tired of feeling like I have to defend every movie with a female lead or a non-white lead, because I didn't really like Captain Marvel that much. I thought The Marvels was a more enjoyable film. I didn't like, you know, a lot of stuff that comes out. But sometimes you feel like you have to respond in a certain way. And look, Supergirl, let's get into it. I'm sorry. I could just go off on that rant all day. I decided to use my platform here where nobody can argue with me, unlike on Twitter. Okay. Before we get into the multitude of super chats that are up right now, Colton, what did you think of the movie?
I liked Captain Marvel. I don't know what. Oh, you mean Supergirl. Okay.
Supergirl, too.
Look, I'm really torn on it as well, just like you, because I am not part of this. You know, this hate campaign decided I wasn't going to like it beforehand. But I also don't want to sit here and pretend like I was blown away. But oh, I already made him mad. He left. I don't want to act like I was blown away by this movie. I was expecting a lot from it based on the comic that it's based on, the movie that it's a follow-up to, essentially. I thought Superman 2025 was just absolutely phenomenal. And you know, Ryan, you just talked about how you don't think the studio gunked up this movie. I completely agree that there wasn't much studio interference on this movie, and I'm kind of worried that might have been a little bit of a problem, because I really do wonder if James Gunn, and I love James Gunn, I think he might be a little too focused on writing, directing his own movie, and he's not really doing a job. And I think if he had stopped in at the editing bay maybe once a week to take a look at Supergirl, I think there was a really, really good movie in that cut. I think there is an arrangement of scenes and maybe a reshoot or pickup here or there, slight changing of that really could have made this movie fantastic. And instead, I think it was fine. It was fine. And I think right now we needed a lot more than fine. Like I would have been fine if it only made like 300 million box office, because I don't think they need to be worried about box office right now. They need to be worried about putting out just absolutely phenomenal movies. And that was the mission. And I kind of think they failed.
Well, I want to get into specific things you didn't like about it in just a second, but first, I'm sorry.
I just want to add one super cool thing. I adore Millie Alcock as Supergirl. Wasn't crazy about the movie, but I adored her. I think she was the one thing that had me actually coming out of the movie having thought, that was good. And then I thought about it a little more and I was like, all right, sorry, go ahead.
Well, Colton, clearly you don't like women. All right, Rachel, what did you think about the film?
I liked it a lot. I said this and I stand by it, but I liked it more than I liked Superman the first time I saw it. And now I love Superman very, very much. But when I first saw that movie, I was like, okay, like I got to think about this for a little. Yeah. And with Supergirl, I was like, no, I liked it. It was what I wanted. I think the changes they, like, here's my biggest thing. And I said this earlier today, and I'm standing by this too. We all can get over the fact that Daredevil Born Again is called Daredevil Born Again and is barely that comic. But this is just loosely based. It's not even, it's not Woman of Tomorrow. It is just Supergirl that is based on that comic. And everyone is up in arms about little changes, and it's driving me a little crazy because I'm like, you can Daredevil, no problem. This, everyone's up in arms. And I'm like, I get it, but also
up in arms about changes from the comic.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay. I should note though, I mean, this is like sacred text to me. This is one of my favorite comics. Copy actually is signed by Tom King. Like I this is my shit right here. Like I don't care if it adapts it well or not. I care that it tells a good story and a complete movie.
Yeah. I agree. And I was like, I liked it a lot. I think why I'm defending the changes is because the thing that really worked for me was like watching Kara fight for her dog. That really worked for me because I was like, there are girls who will do anything for their pets. I am one of them. So watching a superhero be like, I'm going to do the right thing, but I'm doing it for a selfish reason. I'm doing it because I'm saving my animal. Mm-hmm. Incredible. And then I was like, I liked it a lot. I liked the cheesy needle drop a lot. I think it was
me
fun.
Too.
There's some great ones in there.
Yeah. I think it's fun. And I think a lot of people wanted it to be something way different than it is. And that's fine. But then maybe judge the movie you saw and not judge what you wanted it to be. And that's like the biggest kind of thing for me is I'm like, you're judging it what you wanted it to be, not what it actually is.
And we will get into more straight up questions about the adaptation, and I'll let you guys know what I thought in just a second. But Nick, you've seated the floor long enough. What did you think of the film?
So first of all, I enjoyed it, but I'm willing to be the villain of this panel very briefly. One, thank you for your PSA. I agree completely with you on that, Ryan. And I agree with this issue about the changes as well. And by that, just what I mean is if you love the original thing so much, go ahead and read that. No one's taking anything from you. Every time there's a remake of any kind, or they move something from a book to a film or whatever it happens to be, people just love to brag like, well, it wasn't as good as the original. Call a spade a spade. That's you, the reader, the viewer, just showing off that you already know the back content.
It's guilty.
Like, oh, look what I read. Oh, I read Moby Dick. Patrick Stewart isn't nearly as good in the film. Like, I don't want to hear it.
And me my entire life.
And to be the villain here, I really just want to hold viewers to account. And by that, what I mean is things like theater etiquette are super down. I go see a movie now, there's always people on their phone, they're talking, they're doing other things. So even when they're in the theater, they already have a decision made about it. And people like critics, who I think are being super lazy, are catering to our laziness, like the variety issue that you're talking about. They're catering to the fact that we just kind of want to be pandered to as a viewership. So like, we need to buck up and have a higher standard for ourselves and not expect that the film should just do whatever we want. We've got to come into it with a little interpretive work. We've got to be willing to do a little bit of work to find out like, oh, what's this film saying? What's this film doing? Not everything is just going to be a TikTok.
You know what's
I want to get into specifically what we think of, like, about the film itself, and then I want to talk about critical reception and its work as an adaptation. Go ahead, Colton. I'm sorry.
You know what's not fair? Yeah, you know what's not fair is that I find myself comparing this movie to like Superman and the Suicide Squad. That's a high bar to meet. Whereas when that second Aquaman movie came out, I was kind of expecting it to be an absolute pile of dog shit. And then I left. I was like, that was fine. But it's because I was comparing it to a very, very, very low bar that the DCEU had set with Black Adam and, the first Suicide Squad. It was a very low bar. So I think that it's important. And, you know, Rachel and I both said how we saw the movie, or how you saw Superman, but then you thought about it. I almost wonder, because I'm the same way with Supergirl. Like, I walked out having enjoyed it, and then not 15 minutes later, as I sat there and thought about it, I started nitpicking it. And then my opinion started to change. I'm wondering if, with the line of work we're in, do we think too much about it? I don't know. Like, I know that's our job, but...
Well... One thing I really liked about this movie, there's things I liked and didn't like. Like, for one thing, you know, talking about changes from the comic, I'm always somebody, if something's different from the comic, the show Preacher I thought was fine, but it was different from the comic. And I said, it's too different. It's not my story, right? It's just one example. One change I liked is that, and I'll shout out Matt Singer, editor-in-chief of ScreenCrush.com, who wrote my favorite negative review of the book because he's a fan of the comic. He is a father who talked about how he can't really take his young daughters to see this movie. In his review, he called out that, I'm just going to paraphrase right now. I think I have a still of it. He called out that, is this it? No, that's a different one. He called out that she's not so much a beacon of hope in the review. He called out that she, you know, has her own problems and own issues, and that's very different from the comic, which I like. I very much like that this is a different version of Kara. She's earlier in her career. She is not this fully formed superhero. She's somebody who is right at the base of dealing with her trauma. As far as things I didn't like about the movie, like, Ruthie doesn't get that much chance to be fleshed out. She's more fleshed out in the book. Lobo, I thought, was in there for no reason at all. You could lose him from the movie. And thematically, I don't think his character did much for, like, telling Ruthie, yeah, you should kill Krim, you should kill Krim. And that thought about, hey, revenge versus hope is the crux of the comic. And I don't know if that transferred as well as it could have, because Kara was dealing with her own shit and less helping Ruthie with hers. So again, I like the movie a lot. I don't understand all the negative reviews, but is it as great as I hoped it would be? Not even close. So anyone else, specific sense of the movie itself, like what worked, what didn't work?
The Lobo thing, there's a lot of interesting criticism out there suggesting that Lobo just kind of is like masculine permission for the murder that Kara commits, like kind of like this hyper masculine. It's interesting because I liked Lobo in the film for the specific reason of him being there as a witness to the murder that she commits in the end, because I think it really kind of reframes his character from being this hyper masculine, encouraging vengeance, to being like a silent witness to something that she's doing by herself. No one will ever know the gift that she gives Ruthie by taking the sin of ending this person that has to be ended on herself. Lobo watches it.
That's interesting.
Yeah. Lobo watches it, but he's like, yeah, but he doesn't say it to her. So it's this weird moment of kind of in philosophy, what we talk about in terms of feminine discourse, right? Like, instead of, I'm going to do it by myself and be a paternal and decide you can't handle this, Ruthie. Now we have Lobo kind of silently being part of a community of this murder. So to me, it ended up, I think, maybe accidentally. But for those of us who are thinking of it from trying to understand, oh, is this feminist? Is this hyper-masculine? It was a really interesting moment that I enjoyed.
I would say I have 2 points. I have a Lobo point and then another one about Kara and Hope. But with the Lobo point, I also think it's very, I loved him a lot, but I think it's because it shows a dynamic between men and women that I think movies a lot of the times are afraid to embark on, especially with like what the crazy people on Twitter will call like woke movies. They're like, oh, you can't talk to a woman in any way anymore because women are angry about blah, 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 blah. But like, if my friend called me tits, I'd be like, okay, bruh, and just like walk off. And so I was like, that dynamic is one that does exist. Like, I say things to my guy friends and they say things to me that like in other contexts, you'd be like, are you okay with that? I'm like, yeah, it's fine. It's my friend. And like, even though they weren't friends, I think they had a respect for each other. So where it's like, she's very clearly saying mean things about him. He's calling her tits, but it's not like derogatory. He's just insinuating like that's a woman. And I liked it. Like, I was like, this is fine. This is a real kind of dynamic between people who have a mutual respect for each other. That is not, it's not crazy. But then
that's interesting. Hold on, can I just follow up on, that's an interesting perspective because I never would have thought of it that way. I think my main point on Lobo was that he was introduced by Kara reading from his Wikipedia page. So instead of actually seeing him do something, the first thing we hear is like, oh yeah, you don't know about Lobo? He killed everyone on this planet. He did this. And then you're listening to it going, well, wait, he committed genocide. How's he any different from these guys doing female trafficking? So some things I think they could have just shown instead of told. Sorry, Rachel, please. What's your point about Hope?
No, I was just, I understand everyone's like, well, she's not that hopeful. But the point is that she's not her cousin. And I think we always get pigeonholed into making Kara like, she's supposed to be hopeful. She's supposed to be like, oh gosh, golly, like Clark. And I was like, she's not though. She remembers Krypton. She remembers, which hers is like, she doesn't remember Krypton. She remembers Argo, but she has a lot more trauma than Clark ever has right out the gate. Clark's trauma is, oh, I found out I was an alien and my dad had a heart attack. Okay, you're a human, dude. Like, yeah. But like,
yeah.
Rose is like rooted in losing everything she's ever known. Her entire planet is gone. She has to go protect her cousin who is, you know, everyone loves him and praises him. And she's like, I guess I'm just flying around. So her not having hope and her struggling with that, I think is a better character choice than just making yet again another carbon copy of Superman.
Our writer, Lee Mazzio, had a great comparison. He said, Superman's an immigration story and Kara is a refugee story, which I think is a pretty great point. Sorry, Colton, go ahead. That's it. Rachel, thanks. That's an awesome point.
I mean, all respect in the world to Matt Singer. I haven't read his review yet, but I completely disagree with this idea that Kara is supposed to represent hope. I've never taken her character that way.
Well, in the comic.
I haven't read a lot of, I've read that. I haven't read a lot of other Supergirl stuff, but I've always found it more interesting for her to be a character who is just like, they say it in the trailer and they say it in the movie. He sees the good in everyone. I see the truth. She's a beacon of truth. And that's why I find her to really be a far more interesting character than Superman personally. So yeah, I think the way that they're handling her and the like story arc that they're setting up going into Man of Tomorrow, because you know they're going to butt heads. You know Clark and Kara are about to butt heads in that movie and going forward. So I'm hoping
the Superman sequel, Man of Tomorrow, with Brainiac as the villain and Kara as the she's going to be back for that film.
They're going to have very different ideas of how to handle that.
Well, and also she is she still represent hope though. Like hope is not supposed to be
a different kind of hope
thing. Yes, she's a different kind of hope. She's hope that like Ruthie will come to the understanding that she doesn't need to kill that man, but Kara knows she does. So she's representing hope in that way where she's like, no, you don't, you don't, you don't. She's not nice about it. And I think that's kind of the difference is Clark is very nice about his hope and she is just hopeful until she can't. Like she's like, all right, I'm just going to do it because you're not listening to me. And it's just different. And I think that's fun. That's great. I can't wait for my niece to see it who's 5 because she loves Supergirl and like these stories. And I know she's going to be like, crypto. And so like, I think it's just a different.
Until he gets shot.
But like, I do think it is hopeful. It's just different. It's not Clark Kent hopeful. It's Kara hopeful. And they're different from one another.
Yeah. I mean, and I think that, Crypto, by the way, one of the cutest MacGuffins ever. So let's just give credit where credit is due.
Yeah,
but absolutely. What you're saying about hope. I just don't think she even needs it. Yes, I think you're all right in terms of she can be understood in this way, but we don't need another Superman. So part of the criticism that we get is, well, this is just, you know, Superman in female form, which is really kind of reminiscent. And Ryan, you'll know this better than I am, but isn't the original iteration, like when they first made Supergirl, it was supposed to be a love interest for Superman. And then like a wish that was made, I think, by Jimmy Olsen for Superman to have a love interest, and then the wish dissipates. And then they came back later on and made her his cousin instead. And in this case,
I didn't know that. That's interesting.
Yeah, well, at least that's what the internet told me. So my point only being that there's something to be said for why can't we have a female character who, wait for it, is an anti-hero? Like, we're okay, it seems, with male characters who are anti-heroes, who at the end of the day are doing far, far, far more shenaniganry and remain people that we like and we want to see. But in her case, it's like, but she's not hopeful enough. Screw you, dude. She doesn't need, every woman in superhero comics does not need to be your epitome of a woman as a mother and hopeful and everything that you need. And to your point also very briefly, this idea of her being honest, there being a truth to this, isn't that such a great metaphor for the experience of women kind of in general? And I know this isn't the case for all women and all men, but think about like, there's the woman giving birth and dude's on the other side of the curtain, right? But she's there in the blood and the muck and the poop and the mire, right? Having to deal with the reality of the circumstance. Like, women go to gas stations and people hit on them. I've never been hit on. I've never felt in danger in a gas station in my life. It's a level of
privilege. Oh, that makes one of us, my guy.
No one hits on me.
Rough quick stops.
Hey, you know, like it's just
have
like
you been hit on
women that I know.
has had Rachel, I'm legally not allowed to answer that question.
Like every guy, every woman I know has had a dude walk up to her and been like, hey, blah, blah, blah. I've known women who've had to leave because they've been threatened there. So yeah, she's kind of, I think, just a representation of how Clark just gets it so damn easy. Yeah, his planet exploded, but look, he gets to live in this man's world of parents who love him and see all of this great, you know, hugs. And he's just so entitled. And she's like, ah, bitch, listen, some of us have to be here in the dirt actually murdering the villains.
I will say I made a face when you said anti-hero, but it's only because I am very much of the mindset that Wanda Maximoff is an anti-hero and people yell at me and call her a villain. Ooh. And I get really mad about it. Mm. So
no,
I was
love
like,
Wanda. Here for Wanda.
Yeah, but yes. Anyways, real, that was all. I just wanted to clarify why I made a face.
Oh, no, it's all good. I want to talk about the ending, but first, I don't know if you guys have our only Supergirl live stream, so I wanted to show you some of our Supergirl merch we designed at our merch store. This is probably my favorite one, even though I thought it could have been better in the movie. The Main Man AC shirt, like a biker vest. We've got Crypto as Snoopy walking away from a destroyed doghouse. This one I thought turned out the Don't Fuck With My Dog with Kara. And we've got this one. This is Kara as Barbie with her cup and everything. So yeah, those are on our merch store right now, and they are linked below, in addition to other great DC parody merch that we designed for our store. So let's talk about the ending. First of all, just to, for everybody watching, we got the super chats rolling in, by the way. We'll get to those in a second. But for everybody who's not aware of this controversy, at the end of the movie, spoiler alert, Kara kills Krem. And this is not what happens in the comic book. In the comic book, it's very different. She does not kill him. They sent him to the... Ruthie writes the story, and she says that Kara killed him in her fictionalized version, and this was to get the brigands to leave them alone so they wouldn't chase after Ruthie or Kara, or wouldn't chase after Ruthie because, you know, they couldn't take down Supergirl. Anyway, Krem goes to the Phantom Zone for 300 years, and then the comic book ends with Krem being released, and then it turns out, you know, through his imprisonment is reformed, and he begs for Ruthie's forgiveness. And you can see a bit of it here. And this is the panel. And from comicbookmovie.com, Tom King explained, this is from a March 2024 interview. Now, Tom King is the writer. He's also very enmeshed in the DCU. As a creative consultant, he said this is not supposed to be ambiguous. He's supposed to be alive at the end. That's why he grabs his head. Ruthie does not forgive him. She still fucking hates him, bops him on the head, and walks away. Now, I will say, I always took it to be ambiguous. I thought the way that they had this unreliable narrator where she's saying, yeah, you know, Supergirl killed him in the actual written text, but then the visuals betray that. I always thought it was up in the air. That's fine, though, because I'm a fan. The thing that's got a lot of fans scratching their heads is when Anna Nogueira, who apparently, you know, very great writer, you know, very accomplished writer, was asked about changes from page to screen. I think this is in an interview with The Hollywood Reporter. She said the decision to have Kara kill Krem, the ending between Kara and Krem was always in it from the pitch, truly from the very beginning, because the comic ends with Ruthie killing him, but in the far, far future. We knew we weren't going to be able to do that kind of time jump, and it's quite a dark ending of the comic. He essentially has changed. He kills him anyway. I don't see anything else in here that's necessarily relevant for me to read out loud right now. But then, like I said, Tom King and the comic book couples counseling podcast in 2024 made it very clear that authorial intent was that she does not kill him. And yet in the movie, apparently the writer thought that she didn't. Some fans are saying, why didn't they just ask Tom King? Why did James Gunn not notice? Well, what do you guys think about her quote?
Wasn't he a consultant on the film?
Yeah.
And also, it's up for interpretation. It literally says she bopped him on the head. He could be dead there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the final panel is not his hand on his head. The final panel hand has fallen down. So it is ambiguous. Tom King, read your book.
Has Tom King ever read one of the amazing comics he's written? I think it's an interesting point of gatekeeping that you see a lot, where people go, This girl doesn't even like Supergirl comics like I do. She read it wrong. I also don't care if they change the ending. I don't care. If it works for this movie and this version of the story, the movie we saw is not this, right? This is very different. This is a straight-up True Grit adaptation. The first page mimics the last page that I just saw. It's done very much on purpose. You can practically hear the score from True Grit when you read this book. It is very different. The movie condenses the timeline from several weeks into 3 days. Crypto stays the motivation throughout the film, whereas late in the comic, she reveals, oh, Crypto's fine. I was just hanging out with you, when she tells Ruthie that.
Well, and to Rachel's point, neither is Civil War, neither is Age of Ultron, neither is Infinity War, neither is any of these films. They're nothing like their comic, Born Again. And my issues with the Supergirl movie aren't because it's so different from the comic. Mine really come down to what we haven't really got into yet. It's just, I think it was cut horribly. And maybe I'm just being a film nerd there, but I think the pacing and just certain scene selection and where certain scenes
What would you have done? What do you think they should have done different?
The opening scene is awful. I think you have that scene in the movie, but you open the movie with Ruthie and her family sitting at a dinner table, laughing, her and her brother joking around. You introduce her and her family. Then you have the scene where Krim comes in, kills them all. Then you have her going to the bar, and that's where we meet Supergirl, I think. It felt like this movie was cut like a YouTube video or like a TikTok. Like, you know, Ryan, you and I, when we're writing a video, we try to front load it and, you know, talk about what we're going to talk about in the video so we don't lose people clicking off. Mm-hmm. This is a theatrical film. Mm-hmm. You don't have to worry about that. People have already paid their money. Their asses are in the seats. You don't have to show Supergirl in the first 5 minutes. It's almost like they're cutting the movie for streaming. It's like they're not even really worried about the theatrical run. They're trying to edit this movie for a shelf life on streaming or something. I feel like they just don't trust the audience. And I think they did the same thing with Superman, that movie.
But who?
James Gunn was so determined, like in interviews, that, oh, we had to keep Superman close to 2 hours. We had to keep Superman. I loved that movie, but it needed another 15 minutes, I think. And so did Fantastic Four. I say that because those two movies came out around the same time. And that was my biggest gripe with both of those, is they both just felt like I felt like I had whiplash watching them. And that's kind of how I felt with this movie a little bit. They didn't let anything breathe. I feel like things were told in the wrong order. And that opening scene especially, I think, really could have better set the stage for the tone of the movie and what they were going for.
So I forget the name of the Warner Brothers executive who said on the red carpet that they did cut a lot of scenes because they wanted it to keep this like concussive pace all the way through. So you're not wrong in noticing
it was concussive.
Sorry, Nick, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I agree with the issue of editing. People don't give credit to editors nearly as much as they should. Like, they do really important work. There's something to be said, though, I think, Colton, for the fact that that's the problem of the audience, perhaps. Like, I think you're right. There are editorial choices. I wonder about, like, I would have liked to have seen a little bit of more tension between Kara and Clark so that the end, when she returns, it feels a little bit more earned. But I think that there's something to be said for, like, wasn't one of the main criticisms of Disclosure Day the length? Like, we're not the same audience.
No, the issue with Disclosure Day is it just wasn't that good.
No, it's just that it sucks. That the middle act, spoiler alert, that the middle act involves forest creatures and every detail of a character's backstory that we just don't fucking need to know.
So to be precise, amongst the critics, one of their complaints was that it was laborious, that it was a little bit too long. Well, I think, remember the Return of the King? How many classrooms have I been in back in the day when that film came out where the students were like, oh, I just don't understand why it had 3 or 4 endings. Like, we can't handle it. We have a shorter attention span. Look at presidential speeches, for crying out loud. Compare Lincoln's second inaugural to inaugural addresses given now. It's a different audience. So maybe that's
what Zachary Taylor's killed him. So I don't think necessarily a shorter inaugural is a bad idea. I mean, we're going to get into the nitty gritty.
Can I add to your Superman point? Oh, Ryan, we have to tell what happened to you at some point today.
I will. I meant to lead with it, but then I got all impassioned. Stick around to the end of the video, and I'll tell you a funny personal story that happened to me a few minutes before this.
You know what's teasing. Weird? To your Superman point, Nick, I liked that he was at the end of the movie. I didn't feel the need to have him in the movie like in the middle at all. I kind of wish he had just like had like a significant scene at the beginning and then came back at the end. I think that would have been nice, not to have him have like the little cameos throughout. I thought that was, I didn't really like that. But what's also
maybe a bit
weird,
much on the conference calls, but I liked the conference flashback calls to him on Earth with her and explaining
the student things like loved that. And I loved that he just, I loved the line where he goes, why am I yelling?
Why am I talking loud?
Why am I talking louder? You don't understand.
And then he keeps talking to her.
Yeah. It's very cute. It's charming for sure.
But the part of it that I really loved is when he says, look, I know this is silly, the outfit, but it's to show people, you know, I love that because that's why she puts on the suit at the end. That's one of my favorite parts of the movie. Yeah.
And then kill someone in it. And that's a significant signifier, by the way.
Yeah. That's very true.
And that might piss him off if he finds out. But
I can't wait.
What I thought was weird was the way Superman ends is she is coming back from one of her benders, right? And she's picking up crypto. And so what is this movie a year later and it's another bender? Like I felt like that was kind of I felt like the opportunity was there to start this movie maybe with her leaving her, like pick up where Superman ended and like have her in crypto getting in her ship and maybe she's going to go continue her bender or something. Like I have some like continuity there. I was a little confused.
I was also a little confused.
Maybe Supergirl takes place during the movie. No, it couldn't have because the dog was on Earth. Never mind. I'm an idiot. Stop talking.
Never mind. Here is what I will say about, you made a point and then now I can't remember what the point was. I was going to make about Supergirl, not her bender. Oh, Ruthie. I think that, like, I don't need more of Ruthie's backstory. I understand her parents died and because her brother was teasing her, whatever. The only thing, my only actual criticism with this movie is I needed Ruthie to waver one time when it came to Krem. I needed one waver, that's it. I just needed her to either waver or I needed Kara to kind of have a moment where she straight up is like, this is going to change you. I understand it's what you want, but it's going to change you. I needed one moment between those two where it is an honest conversation because as it is Kara saying no and understandably telling her no, but Ruthie's so determined to do it that when she does break at the end, I was kind of like, I needed a little glimmer that this was going to happen earlier or I needed Kara to say in a more direct way, this is going to change who you are as a person and you're not going to like the person you become because of it. Then it was
a great point.
Even a slight hesitation. Yeah. Sorry, like one of the times earlier in the film would have been nice. Yeah.
That's it. Not a lot. Just literally if she just hesitated, then I would have been like, oh, she doesn't actually want to do this. But it's, she's so determined that like when Kara keeps telling her no, I'm like, let a girl kill a man. Like, why are you telling her no? Let her do it.
I need a surprise. Go ahead. Right. Like that, at the end of the day, part of what I liked about the film was the fact that it caught me a little off guard when Kara does the killing. And perhaps they pushed that slightly too far by making it so that you really think it's going to be a standard trope, right? She's going to turn the girl away. The girl's going to have to go. And then he's going to pull out a gun or whatever. You know what I'm saying? Like, so she's not going to kill him. And then, I have to drop him, you know, like, I'm not going to kill you, but I also don't have to save you either. You know, like I kind of expected that trope again. And instead she's just like very casually, like for my dog, I'll injure you, for the girl that you killed, I'm going to kill you. And then it's done. Yeah. And there's like no hype. She gets no glory out of it. So maybe it was a surprise.
Except for Lobo.
Maybe they just. But even in his case, like, is he an audience proxy? Like, is he just us?
Do you guys think that scene was added later? Because it really made it seem like he left. He got the guy's head and left. And then when it cut to him still there, like watching, I was like,
I thought that was weird too. Yeah.
What do you do? I thought you were gone.
I mean, I love the fact that he was though. Like, so I'm okay. Like, I'm willing to forgive a little bit of those continuity edits and cuts. Because let's be honest, there's a lot of continuity edits and cuts that we forgive in most films because we just go with it. In this case, like, I'm glad that he's just there, kind of giving her less loneliness in a very, very, very lonely moment where she's done her duty. And to your point about like the Superman costume. Why is she going around on planets with red suns? It's clearly to avoid a level of responsibility by my lights, right? A level of duty that she does not want to have to engage. She's being told she should. She has to be good. When she puts it on, she reframes.
And she's 23. Exactly.
23.
So cool. Hey,
Rachel, I got a question for you. Oh, go ahead. Make your point. I got a question. Then we got.
I was just going to make a point about crypto, but go ahead.
No, please.
My point, like, also, like, to go back to, like, the changes and stuff like that, but, like, I'm aware in the comics that she, quote-unquote, lied about crypto, like, that he was fine and she would just hang out with Ruthie. And I know there were some people who were like, in the comics, he's fine. She lied about it. I would have been so mad and upset if she lied about that dog and I was emotionally invested, it would have been to the level of like, they killed Chewbacca. No, they didn't. Chewbacca's fine.
That oh, the worst.
Walker. Like,
they would never do that.
Because I was so invested in crypto that I was like, I understood her motivations right out the gate where she was like, the more she learned, she was like, God, now he's trafficking women. I'm going to have to kill him. Like I understood yeah. her. She was like, I'm here because of my dog, but he is making it so easy to be angry and want to kill him because of 20 other reasons. But like, I started this because he hurt my dog.
Can you guys imagine if
in the comic, just real quick, Colton, when they shot Crypto, mm-hmm. I stopped reading and went to the end to make sure he was okay. I couldn't stand it. Oh, I couldn't stand not knowing it really. And I know Crypto is going to be okay, but it really bothered me. It's a horrific moment. Sorry, Colton, I stepped on your.
No. I was just going to say, can you guys imagine if a Star Wars movie fake killed Chewbacca? That'd be crazy.
It'd be the worst. Nobody would ever do that. Rachel, so here's the thing, guys. I was surprised by the Rotten Tomatoes score. There it is on screen right now. Yeesh. I thought this would be reversed. I thought we would have seen the critics liking it and, of course, you know, fans bombing it. And by the way, it's not like I think the visuals aren't exactly what I would have chosen for this. There's a, you know, not everything about this movie is technically perfect, but I was surprised by this. And Rachel, I don't know if you can talk about it because your piece hasn't gone up yet, but you were doing a piece for the Mary Sue about trades and how weird the trades have been.
It's going to be 15 minutes.
Can you talk about that at all?
Yeah, sure. It's 15 minutes a piece that we wrote is going up. Jenna Anderson wrote it. She's incredible. But
oh, I thought you did. Sorry.
No. I found like her and I talked about it. We workshopped it together. But so the piece is all about how like trades are being really weird about this particularly Variety. And it kind of goes back to, if you remember with Sinners, Variety was wrong about Sinners. And then Triple Dog Down, whatever you want to call it, on Sinners box office because they were like, it's a flop. Mm-hmm. And everyone's like, it's not a flop. It only costs X amount of money to make. It's going to be a good movie. It's a good movie. It's fine. And they got so mad that they kept using Sinners as like a point for like a full year. They're still doing it. And everyone's
so
like,
weird.
Please stop using Sinners.
And the same critic did the one that pissed me off in the Supergirl review. Loved Quantumania.
Yes. Which, listen, here's the thing. I am like, if you love one movie, but everyone else, you don't have to love Supergirl. I'm making that so clear. You don't have to love this movie. You can be mad about the comic changes. You can say, I thought it was boring or whatever. What you're not going to do is be sexist in your review or ignore plot points to write a review and then be like, well, why is everyone mad at me and calling me a sexist? I'm like, because it kind of comes across that when all you're doing is complaining about things that are very clearly like easy to understand. In that Variety review, he starts talking about how it's cringy that Clark Kent calls Being Kind punk rock. And I was like, good job. You got the point.
Like, the point of the movie. It's the entire point of the scene and the last scene. And yeah, when I read that, I was like, oh, this guy doesn't.
He doesn't understand it.
Like, yeah, he just doesn't like it. Just
but did in not that his thing. Piece, my wonderful, wonderful Jenna discovered that Owen Gliberman, who wrote it, also in 2011 wrote a piece that for Entertainment Weekly that was like, why are critics so hard on movies? So he could talk about how he liked the Transformers movie. So I was like, oh, okay. So you, when it's your movie, it's okay. But when it's a female-led movie, you're going to be like, this movie is horrible. Because there was another piece today or yesterday that was like, Supergirl stinks. And it was another man who wrote it. And I was like, do you feel better? Do you feel like you grew 2 inches? Like, I don't understand what goes through the mind of people when they're like, instead of just saying I didn't like this movie, I'm going to go in like it is an affront to movies. Morbius exists, and without Matt Smith, that movie is unwatchable. But that is not as bad as Supergirl in your mind. You have bad taste if you think that Supergirl is the worst thing you've ever seen.
And Madam Web is also so, I mean, I don't know. But real quick, I want to point out Rolling Stone gave an absolutely glowing review. David Fear, movie critic I've always liked. So that's not like, you know, we are cherry picking different examples. The Variety review was so stupid. It gained a lot of, because there's a part in the Variety review where he's making fun of the names from the comics and like says, these are dumb, like Star Wars names. That's the point when I stopped reading it. When I'm like, look, dude, that's our thing. You know, fine. You go over there and you like Quantumania all you want and all the other shit you like. But like when you start dissing, of course, Star Wars names are silly. There's a character named Savage Opress, but we pronounce it Savage Opress. They're incredibly stupid names, right? I know, but when you see it written out, it says Savage Opress. I know
this
how to say
just, this applies because I did it on accident today. The Odyssey has insane names. People just actively didn't name any of the people when they were talking about this movie because they're like, I'm not trying to say that. I accidentally called Tom Holland Theseus, and I was like, that's the king of Athens. I'm just making shit up. The weird names exist in every kind of story. It just happens. You got
it. Nobody's angry.
That's such
that
a nitpicky Whitey thing.
And nobody's angry that Whitey McWhiterson and Matt Damon is playing Greek Batman. I just want to point that out. I don't want to get too deep into all the dumb controversies around that movie, but I'm like, Odysseus is Greek Batman. It's just Batman. It's just Batman against gods. All the fuss about that movie, I'm like, look, it's you want literature, read the fucking book, which is, by the way, fictional. It doesn't matter who they cast.
Guys, Cyclops don't exist. I don't know if you know this.
We have to remember that critics are, in a lot of ways, the original rage baiters. Like, we complain about the people who go out there on Twitter and so on and so forth. You know, all these people who are clearly just trying to get views. But that's really where critics are coming from. And, Ryan, I know you know how to say Savage Opress. I was laughing because my spouse and I make fun of that name literally all the time.
Oh, it's the worst. Yeah. Oh, it's the worst name.
Whenever we can drop, we're like, oh, it's Savage Opress. Like, whenever we can drop it in, it's – but we love it. Like, it's – like, right. It's okay, right? The problem is, the critics are also, I think, and this is just my take on it. I think a lot of critics are just really bad at their jobs. They are academics. So, like, I'm in academia, and I can confirm, if you have a suspicion that academics, like people with doctorates, those of us in philosophy, blah, 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 that we're dicks, you are correct. There is a very strong strand of a feeling of, we know better. You haven't read this, you haven't engaged this. And that's how we talk to other people. These critics are people with, you know, a lot of study, in fairness, on film, filmmaking, narrative. They have an opportunity to help us find what is valuable in a thing, even if it's maybe not perfect, so that we can enjoy our short lives. You know, that to me is a critic's job. I don't ever get those 2 hours back. Can you warn me about, if you're expecting this to be a drama, it's honestly more of a comedy. Let me know so that I can go into it as a viewer and enjoy it. But these critics are really, I think, like this Variety article, and speaking out of ignorance, but it's also just an opportunity to piss off people like us.
For now they're getting advertisement. So your article gets passed around the internet and you can write a book of bad reviews, right?
Right.
I'll say this. I'll say this to close off the critic thing. Matt Singer is one of my favorite critics working today. I think he's a great writer. He follows the Roger Ebert school of criticism, which is you should give somebody enough information to where at the end, they don't necessarily think I do or don't want to see that, but they know what you thought of it and they have enough information to decide for themselves. That being said, Roger Ebert wrote a book called I Hated This Movie. So he also profited off that engagement. All right, have to get the super chats.
But before getting off the critics, I just want to say, hopefully we can finally bench this idea of anytime critics like a DCU project, you're woke and you're paid off by DC. Well, now here so what is it now? The critics didn't like Supergirl. So
they didn't pay anymore. They didn't pay for
Supergirl. Right.
So before we get to the super chats, here's the funny story I forgot to mention at the beginning. Earlier, I thought, you know, America's 250th anniversary is coming up. We're going to do fire. I don't have a flag hanging out front, but our house has a little thing out front in front of the store here where you can put a flagpole in. So I walked out to the front of the store and I was going to measure the flagpole distance to put a flag up. And then I was immediately, within a second, stung by a wasp on my bald spot, which is something that, like, it's a sentence I never hoped I would ever say in my life. And I just felt sort of offended. Not that I was stung by a wasp, but that it was where I am follically impaired. It was a horrible moment for me. And then I literally went from that, sprayed the hell out of the thing because I have a can of that stuff, and then came right here and talked to you guys. Let's talk about some of these super chats. Phila Rumba from Down Under gave us $8, said hasn't seen the movie, got nothing to add, just supporting the channel. Give Doug a pat. You got it. Appreciate your support. I would see the movie. Zeus Fleming gave us $14 and said, I really enjoyed the movie. When I posted about this on my Geek page, most of the haters mentioned it being doomed because of some comments that Millie Alcock made. Bro Flakes crying again. I don't know anything about
she said that men were going to be mean to her, and that was just something she kind of came to understand, that like being in a female-led movie, that like that would happen. First of all, reminder that she was in Game of Thrones and they did the same shit to her then, but instead of being mean to her, they all like sexualized her when she was like 19. But anyways, she just pointed that out. She also made a comment that was like, someone brought those comments up to her and were like, the men online were angry about him. She's like, okay, if I angered a Christian dad who was probably not going to see this movie anyway, like, oh, well. And then everyone was like,
she is Supergirl.
Insulting Christians. Yeah. And so it just became a whole thing where men just were like, anything she says that I'm going to pick at her. That's all.
Okay. That all sounds not related to the film at all. I'm the kind of person, I don't follow celebrity gossip. I'll hear, did you know this person said, I'm like, I don't give a shit. Was their movie good? Like, it's for things that people say, I don't really care. Things they do, that's a different story. All right. Anyways, Armand gave us 10 pounds. After reading the comic, this movie made me feel empty. It is the live action Mulan of DC. It feels sauceless compared to the comic. That being said, screw those grifters. It's not bad because of women. Again, I think that's a totally valid opinion. I personally try not to base things on the comic too much. Like when I saw Secret Invasion, I knew, okay, it's not the same. It's not a big crossover event. It's a spy thing. And that's really cool. It failed as a spy thing. It's not even an adaptation of the source material. And I don't know that this movie is necessarily a very good adaptation of this comic book. I think the comic book is so much better on so many ways. And I'm one of these people, I refuse to say graphic novel unless it's published in a graphic novel format. I think that's pretentious. It's a comic book. But, you know, I still like the movie.
I just want to fix something real quick. It wasn't Jenna. Mm-hmm. Jenna's great. Go people should watch her comic channel. She knows comics. It was Myra Drake who wrote it. And so I just went and checked and was like, oh, wait, hold on. So...
That's okay. Go You're support. Handling a lot of different things and different people. I gotcha.
Ryan gets my name wrong all the time.
Shut up, Bob. All right. Slayer Knight gave us $10 and said, I wish I had the link here he's talking about, or they're talking about. I read the comic it's based on. It's not a big superhero movie. I saw it twice and I actually loved it. Hideo Kojima had a great comment on Twitter that I agree with. I don't have that. I'm going to try to find that. I'm curious what he said because I really like his opinion on things.
I totally recommend, even as somebody who came out of it, you know, not thrilled, I do recommend seeing it for Millie Alcock's performance alone. Like, if I were to give like a review of, like, I'd share my negatives, but if the question was, should I see it? I'd be like, yeah, if you're a...
Please see films in theaters. Please see films.
Yeah, right.
Right? Like, Here's the comment. Amazon killing it all off. Please.
Here's the comment from Hideo Kojima. I saw Supergirl in IMAX. It wasn't a superhero movie, in quotation marks, about saving the earth through self-sacrifices such as justice confronts evil. It was a coming-of-age story about saving oneself, Kara, as she struggles with her own trauma. Structurally, it feels like Mad Max Fury Road. It's a pretty good comparison. Where everyone is driven purely by survival instinct beyond notions of good and evil, and more like the good and the bad and the ugly, where the heroes, villains, and scoundrels all converge. I agree. I think that's a fantastic comment. You guys got any thoughts on that as far as it being like not really a superhero movie and more of a
Well, that was
thing?
The intention, wasn't it? They specifically wanted some Mad Max Fury Road, at least in terms of the cinematography. But yeah, it's what you get after a while. It's the same thing that kind of happened with Westerns. We had a lot of Westerns for a while, and then eventually it started to kind of peter off and they drift in different ways. When you start getting satire
and like, more than once, by the way, I mean, the Westerns were dead before Stagecoach, and then Stagecoach brought them back, and then, you know, revisionist Westerns brought them back.
I can't remember the exact quote. I'm trying to find it here on my phone, but James Gunn said something to the effect of like, no, there's not superhero movie fatigue, but superhero movies are going to have to break from that standard.
Yeah. He said it becomes a bunch of nonsense, as I think his exact words. But then again, James Gunn said The Flash was his favorite superhero movie ever made. And, you know, so who knows what we can trust out of that guy. Michael Rondini gave us $10. I kid.
James Gunn didn't say that. Yeah, I was like, wait a second. That was,
no, he said The Flash is one of his favorite superhero movies ever made.
One of his favorite.
Right. Michael Rondini gave us $10 and said, I saw the negativity before I went, and I just don't agree that it was bad. It was a lot of fun. Was there a dip in tempo 60% of the way through, though? Yes, it was still really good. Love the world they are building. Yeah, I mean, I don't think it was perfect, but...
I think looking back, like, take a Thor 2, and I do not hate Thor 2 like everybody else does, or take an Incredible Hulk. Like, are those movies great? No, but I think they're fine. And they're important building blocks to the overall MCU. So I think looking back like 5-10 years from now, I think Supergirl's going to fit in just fine. Like,
I think it's going to age really well.
Yeah. and it'll still be like an important piece of the story.
Agreed.
Salvador Estrada gave us $5 and said, I thought Supergirl was a 6.5 out of 10 and I had fun. It's a low rating for I had fun. I feel like the critics killed the movie before it even came out. Again, yeah, I am shocked at the... I think when I watched the movie, actually, I wasn't that shocked. When I watched, I turned to Lee and said, critics are going to hate that. And I couldn't put my finger on why, but I think now a superhero movie has to be so good that it overcomes the fact that critics are really tired of superhero movies.
Can I also point out, I don't know what it is now. I did this when it was like 100 reviews, so it's been a minute. For every one female critic review, there were about 10 male reviews.
Interesting.
So I also think that didn't help. Because like when I counted, and it was like, I think in the 70s, it was like 16 or 17 female reviewers. And like some didn't like it. Some liked it a lot. Like it was like a range. Mm-hmm. But like, even when they were just like, it's fine, it tended to be a fresh, not a splat. And so like those 17, that means of 77, that meant that 60 of them were dudes.
That's
and so it was like a lot of guys were like, I'm going to review Supergirl. And I was like, okay.
They need a bruised tomato option. Because I wouldn't give it a splat.
Yeah.
I'd give it a discount tomato.
And yeah. a lot of critics don't use a scale when they do things. I've always thought Rotten Tomatoes was, when it first started, like 20 years ago, I was like, oh, this is cool. It's a good aggregate. I can find all these reviews and read them. Yeah. I didn't really give a shit about the actual fresh rating. And then when it became that, it became commercialized and it was bought by corporations. Just read reviews yourself and find your favorite reviewers like we all do.
Or go see the movie.
Stan Sensibility gave us $10 and said, why are men both obsessed with and also hate female characters? I've loved comics and sci-fi for more than 30 years as a woman. And yes, incels, that's possible. I wonder how fans would react to Ripley in Alien these days, if there'd be a big backlash against that, right?
Well, one of the reviews, and we didn't talk about this in the critic section, that was horrendous, was some guy, and it's on Rotten Tomatoes, you can find the review. He said, oh, I thought we used to like going to the movies and looking at girls on screen. In his review for Supergirl on Rotten Tomatoes, he talked about how hot he thought girls on movie screens were. And I was like, if I wrote that I only ever went to a movie because of a hot man, like I make jokes in my reviews, but if I wrote like, oh, what happened to Superman being shirtless and hot when I saw Superman, every man would have been like, you shouldn't be a critic. All you talk about is men.
Oddly enough, a lot of straight men made that argument. I remember seeing a lot of comparisons of like supercut Henry Cavill, you know, who isn't Adonis. Jesus Christ. Nobody can live up to that standard. Are you kidding me?
He was carved out of marble. He was like,
exactly. Like, he's not even a person. But then if you also follow this shit, you know that before every take, the guy like Hugh Jackman doesn't drink water for 2 weeks then endlessly does push-ups before he's shirtless.
This film, I think, gets caught between the virgin and the Madonna, you know, the Madonna and the prostitute issue, right? Because in other words, the people who want to see, well, where's the TNA? You know, I want to see flesh. Right. They're trashing it.
Oh, man, we're going to clip that bit of you right there. And that's going to be your intro.
You're going straight to hell for that, Ryan. But think about on the other end as well. The critics who are really taking these things seriously, they're not looking for, you know, just to pander. It's not perfect enough. It's not feminist enough. It doesn't, you know, it's pandering. It's this idea of like anytime it's some sort of female hero, female led film written by a woman, it's either going to have to be sexy or perfection. It can't just be okay.
What's the implication go ahead.
Yeah, we got a lot of super chats to get through. I'm sorry, guys. We can't necessarily discuss all these as much as I would want to. Nietzsche for Speedy, which is a great name, gave us $5 and said, my main issue was, why the changes? They were big changes. Why change the end? This was Mad Max for Kids featuring low-budget Guardians mid-film. Again, if you read the comic and you're basing your opinion on that, I can't argue with you. Broflakes crying about comic accuracy are the exact same ones who love Civil War, despite missing almost every major beat from the comics. The hypocrisy is real, says Zeus Fleming for $14 Canadian. And Dipshit Savant, which remains one of my favorite names of our users, gave us $5 and said the hate does not match the quality, especially when so many of the haters are, I'm not going to say this part, unattractive men who complain that Millie Alcock isn't hot enough. And Saggy Bear, by the way, if you're the type of person who's thinking, I learned a new term recently called, it's a German slur called hobbyless behavior. And if you're the kind of person who, you know, your main hobby is to consume media and go online and spew this kind of, please go out and create something. It's a great TikTok by Jason Pargin that he put out recently. Please go take a cooking class, plant something, build Legos, just create something in life instead of consuming things and spewing hate and vitriol. Saggy Bear gave us $5 and said, I love a bad guy that's a bad guy. Kara's kill is good, but not nice versus Lobo who kills for money. I took Lobo seeing the kill as he thinks Krim should. There's a typo there. I can't figure that out. And Buster Barnes gave us £5 and said, I thought it was good, but I was hoping for better. Me too. Definitely overhated by some. Millie is awesome. It needs to be a bit longer to flesh out relationships. Somebody agreeing with Colton in there. And CC Black gave us $2, said Gunn did do this to himself with critics. I wonder what they mean by that. Did he engage with critics in a negative way?
I kind of know what they mean. And if I'm wrong, I'm sorry to this person. But he has been very mean to Grace Randolph. And then Grace Randolph was very mean about this movie.
He has, but yeah.
Rightfully so, in my opinion. But I'm not going to say anything.
Well, Grace was the one who said something was going to happen in Peacemaker. And then he came on the internet and said, no, that's not going to happen. And didn't she fire back and say, well, that's what I heard?
Yep, and she does that a lot. She did that with Kathy Ann for Birds of Prey, famously, and Kathy Ann was like, that was never in my movie. And she fought her on the internet, and Kathy Ann was like, okay. So
not the only person I've seen do this with James Gunn either, by the way. I don't want to single out Grace.
Yeah, people love to do it with James Gunn. James Gunn's like, no, and then they're like, he's lying. Well, so then no wonder he's mad at you.
James Gunn, I think he's lying about Darkseid, though.
Well, probably. But James Gunn is very good with the people who like understand what he's trying to do and like respect it, where they're like, yeah, you know what, man, like I'll see what you're gonna do. I'm not gonna pry. It's the people who pry and are wrong that he's like, I get to call you out. And I think that's kind of fun. I love that.
It's sort of refreshing too. We're so used to, like, you know, all due respect to the Marvel guys, but they're trained, they're corporate guys, and they have all these layers of doublespeak and hidden. It's like talking to a politician. Mm. Whereas James Gunn is just like talking to your uncle who's had a couple and isn't afraid to like tell you what's on his mind.
I just don't want this to go unsaid. I'm 28, so I can say this because she's 26. I think Millie Alcock is just gorgeous. I think she's hot as hell. So I don't know what these guys are talking about. You know,
it's gotten nasty out there. Like the Twitter swamp is really a gross place.
I don't get that at all.
I have one thing to say. Because people were criticizing her teeth because they have nothing better to do. As somebody with an overbite who I literally had braces and my teeth shifted, I was like, I'm not wasting money where you can't see my bottom teeth 99% of the time. I'm not saying that that was her situation. Her teeth are fine. But I am saying they all zoom in on one thing and they're like, look at this. Look at this. Oh, put your face on the internet.
Yeah.
Says the person with an avatar. Exactly. Yeah. Says the bot.
Put it on there.
Avatar.
Let me see your face.
Yeah.
We got a couple more here. Angel Manfredi gave us $10 and said, Millie was one of the best parts of the movie, and I will readily admit it was just okay. A good movie, a good matinee flick. I'm excited to see her in a movie with a good script. Again, like I thought the movie had a good script, personally. But, I mean, I think that's a valid, completely a valid point. I just, there's the parts of the movie I think I had a problem with were just more the execution. Colton, it's like you were talking about some of the editing decisions. I like that they didn't reveal her whole backstory till near the end because I think it progressed her motivation.
Yeah, yeah.
I just think visually, maybe Craig Gillespie, who I love as a director, some of the visuals and some of the decisions they made with the CGI and things, it just didn't quite.
Yeah, the film's hideous.
I thought it was kind of a bland looking movie. It was very, you know,
it's very brown, really, it's very muddy. It looks like it was shot on a soundstage.
That's my main thing. It's parts of the comic are brown and muddy too, but I don't know. That was
it gave Quantumania. Speaking of Quantumania, like visually, right. I thought this isn't very. And you know, I think they actually did some work on that because the early trailers were way uglier than the third trailer in the actual movie, where we actually got like some deep blacks and stuff, and they actually like boosted some contrast. So I think
you
they may
are all have... about that saturation and contrast. This guy hates. He wants to run everything through DaVinci himself. Ichijin gave us $20 and said, love the comic, love the film. The endings are both awesome. This Supergirl came to realize that she was the one who can take on the burdens that other people shouldn't have or can't. I love this version of Supergirl. I think, Nick, you made a great point earlier when you said She took that sin on herself, which is, you know, for a franchise that's often been changed from its original roots of like about Jewish mythology, who's been, become a Christian metaphor. That was a great point to make.
Pretty heroic as well.
Yeah,
it was the superhero thing to do.
I honestly really enjoyed it. Let's just say we agree that the film is meh. Still go see it. Like, we are constantly complaining about not getting the films that we want, the, you know, the superhero thing dying off, so on and so forth. Well, there's a reason. If we're not actually asses in seats, if we're just waiting for it to come to streaming, they're just going to start canceling more and more of the things that we love. And yeah, sometimes you have to have some meh films. That's a great point, Colton, that you made about Thor 2. I genuinely did not enjoy the film that much. I still watched it, and the gift that we got after it was Ragnarok. We have
damn
to
straight,
support
baby.
The media that we
My
love.
Favorite MCU film. Rachel, I think you were saying something a second ago and I cut
well,
you off.
I was just going back. The only thing that I would say is, can we stop trying to make floating hair look good? It doesn't. Just make it all one like unit. I don't need like pieces of it. Just put it all back. We'll suspend our disbelief about the science of it, because multiple movies, this is not just a knock on Supergirl, this is a knock on any movie that has a person in space. They're like, here's my strands of it. Just make your hair go like this, like a whole thing, please.
I thought it worked when she's yelling in space, though, because she should look a little bit unleashed and a little bit
maybe
wild.
Maybe they underwater. I don't know.
They did purposely say that they wanted her to be, to look like messy, like a little disheveled. And I think it is, at least to some extent, symbolic of her, of her interior trauma.
Oh yeah, the screaming one worked, but it was just like sometimes, like when she's trying to, like, there's just, they do it in other movies where the hair, just figure it out, do something that doesn't look like science based. I need it to look a little bit better, and this movie is just like the straw that broke the camel's back with the floating hair in space for me.
I just wish she'd struck a crucifix pose when she went into space, that, just so we could get that imagery. Yeah.
We've never seen that in a Superman film before. I got a couple more super chats here. Igloofy gave us $2 and made a point here. A mid superheroine movie is a huge letdown. This brings to a point that I bring up a lot, that unfortunately, when you get a movie that is outside the typical range of like a white cisgender male movie, it always has to be Jackie Robinson. It's always got to be like Jackie Robinson wasn't just, you know, an important player because he broke the color barrier. It was also because he was one of the greatest players to ever play the game and draw breath. And it took that to shake people out of their doldrums. Whereas like Black Panther was so freaking good. Wakanda Forever was so freaking good. Blade, so freaking good. Whereas when one of these movies hits and it's mid or doesn't have, it's an unfair comparison to make. It is absolutely an unfair comparison to these movies and these filmmakers. It is unfortunately true where they have to do so much more heavy lifting and be so much better than shit like Black Adam for people to actually acknowledge the work that went into it.
I think we need
to agree with the sentiment.
Mid-2000s. I'm tired of this. I lived through Daredevil and Elektra and Catwoman, which is not really any kind of actual. They just were throwing things at the wall, but it was great because Halle Berry was hot. But like the thing is, we used to have mid superhero movies and it was fun. Like the Val Kilmer Batman movie is aggressively mid, but because we're all like, Batman is sacred, now everyone pretends that like every Batman movie that's ever been made is good. Not true. The Spider-Man movies, sure, at the time, great. They are not good, that good in retrospect. When you look back, there have been other Spider-Man stories that are made that are better than those movies, but I mean, those were good by the 2000s standard. So it is like, I miss when we could have mid movies. So then the movies that by today's standards would maybe just be mid movies are like the greatest thing people have ever seen. We used to be a proper society.
You had me.
We used to be
until you attacked Raimi. You had me.
Well, Ray, one and two hold up. I mean, three obviously has its problems because of the studio. And this is one thing we didn't get a chance to talk about, but I am. Okay, we're gonna have you want to talk about Spider-Man 3. Sean, we just keep getting super chats. Sean gave us $5 Canadian and said thoughts on Matt Singer's 4 out of 10. I landed on 7 out of 10. And Mrs. Woman of Tomorrow's Heart, but 4 out of 10 ignores Millie and the film's strengths. Look, I said this earlier. I don't agree with Matt, but I respect his opinion. I thought he wrote a great review. Mm-hmm. And he approached it from a perspective of a comic book fan and a father.
The good point about this, though, is with the critics being like this, is it helps remind us how much we are in the minority in our fandoms. Think about how much, like to your point with like Black Panther, how long did it take for a fantasy film to get an Oscar when it comes to something like Lord of the Rings? Like we've had science fiction, superhero films, fantasy, the intellectuals, the Academy, you know, people giving the Oscars, the critics have always shit upon it. And then we had the MCU and we were in the zeitgeist and we were popular. Well, it's not as popular anymore. We need to band together, stop attacking each other and see the real enemy, which are the damn critics.
The Hollywood elites. Colton just asked what we would give it. I, on a scale of like, I give Superman 9 out of 10. I think I would give this movie like a 7 out of 10, maybe 6.5.
Probably oh, 7. Well, that's interesting because I'm right there with you, but you say you.
There's a reason I haven't talked about my opinion of this movie very much, and it's because I've only seen it once. And when I see the movie the first time for work, I'm taking notes, I'm looking for Easter eggs, I'm thinking about the videos we can make from it. I personally really do need to see a movie that I'm working on a second time to really form a strong opinion on it.
I liked it better the second time, and I liked it a lot the first time.
There you go. Sorry, Colton, I cut you off.
I think this just kind of shows that, to the point, to the conversation we were just having, is we are judging these films on certain curves, whether it be a more positive or more negative curve. Because if you compare this movie to like a Madame Web or a Kraven or a Daredevil, Catwoman, it's fantastic. But when you start comparing it to, I think, a superior film like Superman or, you know, one of the Avengers movies or something, well, then I would say it's more mid. So there's kind of that curve there. And then I think everybody, like I think with you and me, Ryan, right there, I feel like I come in at a 6.5. But we have two totally different opinions on the movie. So it's
I think this is maybe at a 7 or 7.5 for me because I'm thinking about it. This might be my favorite female-led superhero film.
See, and I love Captain Marvel.
I think Captain Marvel, you talk about things that are told out of order. I think that movie could have been a lot better. Wonder Woman would be it for me, except I just hate that third act. I think they had the perfect ending and they walked away from it. And I can't get over that with that movie. Everything else about it, I loved. One more here. We got Buster Barnes, gave us 5 pounds and said, I thought Lobo was there at the end so he can eventually say at some point in front of Superman that Kara murdered someone, leading to more tension. Talked about this in the ending explained. I 100% think that that murder is in there for a reason. It's going to come back when it's revealed that maybe Brainiac destroyed Krypton. And that's going to, you know, I think that's there for a reason.
Yeah, and I think what we touched on earlier, that the fact that she's wearing the exact same symbol as Superman, that's going to come back into play. That's the symbol of the killer of the Krim or something. And Superman's going to be like, excuse me? The what?
I love that. Yeah. That's good.
It's chef's kiss.
Thank you. Well, I better leave on that.
Rachel, what were you about to say? I'm sorry.
I was just going to say, I was like, as we were talking, it made me think about it. I also think, listen, I'm wearing a Christopher Nolan shirt, so what I'm about to say is not a knock. But I think that people watch those Dark Knight movies and they're like, this is what superhero movies are. And now everyone judges every superhero movie based on the Dark Knight movies. And I'm like, those were the best Batman movies until the Batman came out, when he's an actual detective and an actual Batman. Those movies were like how we can do something cool with superhero genres. And now everyone holds it as a Bible. We got to stop. And so I think like movies like this, which is just like a fun superhero story that is dark, has its darker moments, but is ultimately a kind of fun movie, gets shafted because people think there's supposed to be something bigger than it is. And we need a happy medium between the Joss Whedonisms and the Christopher Nolanisms that have kind of taken over superhero movies. And like that was Taika for a little, but like now we need to kind of figure out what the new era of that's going to look like.
I think people
can. And that's what we're going to talk about on our live stream tomorrow. We're going to be talking about Marvel and various news there. We got to wrap it up there, guys. I'm sorry. I could literally do this all day. Nick, you can find him on the channel Philosophy All Along. Thanks for coming on. Always a pleasure talking to you. Rachel, editor-in-chief, correct? You keep getting promoted. Okay. Editor-in-chief, soon-to-be owner-operator of the Mary Sue. Very proud of you. You can find her links down below. And of course, Colton, you can find here on Screen Crush and on his own channel. Jonathan C279 just gave us $10 and said, great form, guys. Thanks for being a great channel. We really appreciate it. Thanks, Colton.
Bye, buddy.
And thanks to all you guys. You can let us know what you thought of Supergirl down in the comments below, or find me on Twitter, Blue Sky Threads, or on Substack, or in our free-to-join Discord server. And if it's your first time here, good golly, welcome to the channel. What took you so long? Smash that bell for alerts and be sure to like and subscribe. And I'll talk to you later for Screen Crush. I'm Ryan.